Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. So look, it's Wednesday and we've been talking a lot about Brett Kavanaugh and the developing scandal, whether he's likely to make it on the Supreme Court or not, pretty much all week. So today we're going to mix it up and we're going to talk for at least half of the run of the show about exactly that and nothing else. So get ready. There's a lot going on with Brett Kavanaugh. But in my defense, it is obviously objectively the most important story going on right now and merits every bit of attention we're giving it and probably more. But we will be talking about not only that, we'll also move on to some of the aftermath of Hurricane Florence. There's still flooding expected, which is a threat, but not just to humans. There's another angle to this story, a dirty, disgusting angle that we'll get into a little bit later on the show. And then I am so excited because we have a cognitive neuroscientist, Bobby Azarian, is going to be joining us. George Mason University professor. He's an expert on narcissistic personalities in leadership positions. So, you know, maybe we can find one of those in the world to break down and talk about a little bit. Might be a little bit fun.
So the thing is, it's JR Wednesday.
JR Wednesday.
I'm going to be interviewing this neuroscientist to talk about John and his aspirations to one day become a leader because he has this narcissistic personality that I have to deal with every day.
I have whatever the exact opposite of narcissism is. I have no faith or confidence in myself whatsoever. I learned it from my mom. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, she might be watching this. I apologize, Mom.
Under the bus.
Yes. No, I'm kidding. It actually has no bearing on reality whatsoever. But as I said, there's so much to talk about, especially when it comes to Kavanaugh. So why don't we jump in, especially because there's several angles on this. So we had said yesterday that we were expecting that on Monday, next Monday, there would be testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee, both from Christine Blasey Ford and also Brett Kavanaugh. That might still be the case, but it also might not, because now Christine Blasey Ford is saying that considering the attacks against her and the lack of willingness of the FBI to actually investigate this, she might not be comfortable at this point doing that testimony. And her lawyers released a statement to that effect saying, while Dr. Ford's life was being turned upside down, you and your staff scheduled a public hearing, this is to the Senate, for her to testify at the same table as Judge Kavanaugh in front of 24 U.S. senators on national television to relive this traumatic and harrowing incident. As the Judiciary Committee has recognized and done before, an FBI investigation of the incident should be the first step in addressing these allegations. And President Trump has been asked about this, about whether he will task the FBI with investigating this. And he says that not only will he not, but also that he can't. Even though that has been fact checked, of course he could. They do it all the time. He chooses not to because he wants that guy on the Supreme Court. But as of right now, we don't know for sure that we'll have the testimony. Whether we do or we don't, how do you think that impacts the future of this nomination, JR?
Well, it's going to muddy the waters further. So from both ends of it, because there's the call for the investigation from Christine Blasey Ford, which then can always easily be written off as, oh, of course she's calling for this further because it'll delay the confirmation hearings further. All they're trying to do is delay. So the problem is it's an easy thing to shoot down in normal society, in normal life, to say, well, listen, there's an investigation. Yes, the FBI does do investigations. They do conduct these things. Yes, the president can call for them to do it. Although they deny all that, but somehow you can say all these things that are false from the perspective of the president and many of these Republicans, and enough supporters will buy it. So it's no longer a truth versus a false narrative. It's a who's going to believe who. Mm-hmm. And there's enough people in this society, they're going to believe the lies. So now we have to cater to lies and then work around those. So I think it's going to be a hard slug for this alleged victim to come with the delay tactic with trying to have an investigation come through, which it should be that way, and have it actually get, you know, taken in.
Yeah, especially because two of the senators who had said that at this point, considering the allegations, they're not yet ready to vote for him, even though they've been considered yes votes before and wanted her to testify. That is, Senators Corker and Flake are now both saying that if she wants to testify on Monday, good. If not, well, maybe we have to have a vote anyway. So their reasonableness extended just so far, but no farther.
And some of the factors in coming to why, of course, they'll ask questions. Why did she take so long to even say anything? it's being illustrated right now with the, and we'll maybe get to it, with the things that she's dealing with, her family's dealing with, and with many victims of sexual assault deal with. It's the outcry, the bashing, the character assassination, the threats, all those things come to someone and they know it's going to come. So they're probably most likely trying to stay out of that spotlight. And then when 3 or 4 days later, you're told to go and thrust yourself further into that spotlight.
Yeah.
And we've seen this happen with Supreme Court nominees in the past, not that long ago. And we know how badly that came out for her.
Yeah.
Anita Hill, let's be honest.
Exactly. And we're going to circle back to that in just a second. But in this first break, or the first segment, there's one point that I especially want to make, because I consider there's several goals or missions for this show. But one, I think perhaps the most important, is myth busting for things that are just being spread in the media and generally not questioned. I think that we need to rebut those when necessary. The one that we did yesterday was that this is about behavior he did as a 17-year-old. And should we really be judging him based on what he did as a 17-year-old? When that is not the case whatsoever. Yes, that act was when he was 17. But if it happened, he's lying about it now. Not when he was a 17-year-old, as a full-grown adult who wants a prestigious job. So this is not behavior from 36 years ago. This is behavior from today and this coming week, actually. But the one I want to talk about today is something that you alluded to, is that they want you to believe that this is a he said, she said situation. She says he tried to rape her. He says that he didn't. Who's to really say? And the Senate wants you to believe that that's what it is, which is why with this Monday testimony that we're going to have and might still, they have two witnesses, Christine Blasey Ford and Judge Brett Kavanaugh. Remember, by the way, that during the Anita Hill situation, there were 22 witnesses. So they understood there that other people's perspectives matter. But here is why this is not a he said, she said. They were not the only two people there. We know of one other who was directly involved in the alleged incident, and that is Mark Judge. We have told you so many things from his own words, from books he's written, that imply that things like this were going on. Perhaps not this actual incident, but he's there. He says that he has no memory of it, and he's not willing to testify, but he could. And it seems bizarre to say that it's just Christine Blasey Ford versus Brett Kavanaugh when there is another person who was directly there and at least one other person who was at that party and would have seen her storm out at the time. The Republicans have no interest in talking to those other people, not because they believe that it's not worth it. They would probably disagree with us anyway. They're worried about what they will say. And this is unconfirmed at this point. I want to give it a little bit more time before saying that it's definitively the case. But there's another woman, Christina King, that posted on Facebook saying that she went to school in this area at that time, was I think 1 year ahead of Christine Blasey Ford. She says that she heard about this exact incident around the time that it happened and can corroborate that it was being talked about. Now, the problem with that, at least as of right now, is that Christine Blasey Ford has said that she did not talk about this at the time. Now, that does not mean that it's impossible that it could have gotten out from someone else. It's possible that Mark Judge was talking about it, or the fourth unnamed person at this party. We don't know for sure. But at least now there appears to be some contemporaneous confirmation of what happened. It could be refuted in the future, but that's what we've got right now.
Well, it's you know, there's a lot of unknowns. You know, I'll be honest. There's lots of things we don't know. There's lots of things we want to figure out. There's lots of people that are still alive today because this incident allegedly happened in 1982. It wasn't that long ago. These folks are adults. Maybe their memory's a little hazy. Maybe you need to corroborate one story with another. Maybe you can figure all this out. You know what we need?
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
An investigation.
Yeah.
Crazy how that works. So there's all these unknowns. You'd be like, how are we going to talk with cloudy memories and things that happened so long ago? The kid was 17 years old. Yeah, they were drinking at a party. We're still glossing right over the fact that they're all drunk at 17 years old at a party. Anyway, and continuing on with all these things that can happen, how do we know? Mm-hmm. But we don't want to find out.
Yeah.
Why don't we want to find out? Why don't we want to have a chance to try to find out? Because you're worried about what you might find.
Exactly. They are very worried about losing this opportunity to have Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court when he has the 1-2 punch of he's going to destroy Roe v. Wade and he'll protect Donald Trump from the consequences for his illegal actions. That is all that this is about. But there's a couple of things we need to mention. One, this will come as a shock to no one who has watched the fallout from women accusing powerful men of sexual misconduct of this sort. But an unnamed source told The Times that following the threats that were given to her, Christine Blasey Ford and her two teenage children moved out of their home. She had to hire private security. One of the messages left for her was that she had 6 months to live, you disgusting slime. So when you hear people like Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson and Bill O'Reilly saying that these women are just doing it for the attention, okay, that's a thesis, I guess. Christine Blasey Ford got the attention. Would you like this sort of attention? Would you like to be just the latest person that has to move, possibly in the beginning of a series of moves to protect the lives of your family? They keep saying that. And she predicted this, by the way, Christine Blasey Ford. Before she revealed herself, she said, what is the point of going through this if it's probably not going to accomplish anything and my life will be thrown into disarray? Would be preferable to the current
situation. It's always weird how people in positions of privilege and unoppressed people like to talk about how people that are in these positions and actually speak out finally to try and get some kind of equality, how they're always wanting this attention. But the attention that they receive is never anything that the person who's talking down on them would actually trade places for. Okay, so if it's such great attention that she's getting, you're going to trade places with her? Who is it? Is it Ingraham and Tucker who are saying this? You going to trade places? Do you want that kind of attention?
Well, they all say it. Not just about her, but about all of these accusers.
Gay folks. Oh, gay people are faking, acting like they're actually gay. Oh, this gay marriage thing is just an agenda. So they're actually straight, but acting like they're gay because they want the negative attention and death threats and actual death and murder to happen to them. All these black folks saying they're getting killed by cops and marching in the streets and having cops turn on them.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good attention. That's kind of attention that people would like to have because it's fun. Hey, I could sit on my couch and watch Jeopardy, but then I'm going to go outside and instead get attacked by the police because it's more fun. That's the attention I want. Trade places with those folks. See if you want that attention.
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But we do have one other incredibly important thing to cover before you go to our first break, and this is actually a TYT exclusive. TYT Investigates has found an incredibly suspicious situation going on right now directly from the hands of Brett Kavanaugh. So back in 2015, he gave a speech at the Law School of Catholic University. And we're going to bring up a part of this speech. I'm going to gloss over a bit, but there's an important part that I want to give you. This video is available, by the way, if you'd like to actually see him saying it. But I want to go through quickly. He talks about being these friends of his being men for others. He talks about a few particular people. But let's move on to a little bit later on in the speech. He says, okay, we had a good saying that we've held firm to this day, as the dean was reminding me before the talk, which is, quote, what happens at Georgetown Prep stays at Georgetown Prep. That's been a good thing for all of us, I think. Now, that might be a slightly jokey thing to say, but it certainly hints at the possibility of maybe some dark stuff going on. And it gets into his mind a little bit. And this is not back in the 80s. This is his memories of that time from just 3 years ago. Now, it's really interesting that when you are going to be nominated for the Supreme Court, you have to give a bunch of documents to the Senate. And in fact, this speech was one of the documents given to the Senate. But they're not familiar with that particular quote, because in the transcript that he submitted to the Senate, he scrubbed that part of the speech out of it. So he was very happy in 2015 to talk about what happens at Georgetown Prep stays in Georgetown Prep, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But when it comes time to get on the Supreme Court, he took that part of the speech out. What does that say about Brett Kavanaugh? What does that say potentially about his fears of other things coming out that might derail his nomination? This is as suspicious an action a nominee can possibly take. And so far, people aren't talking about it, but I certainly hope that they do. Okay, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, I want to cover just a few of the most recent attacks against Christine Blasey Ford. And finally, Donald Trump weighs in. Who does he think is the victim in this situation after this? Okay, while JR desperately tries not to sink to the floor in his chair, we're going to do some more updates on Brett Kavanaugh. So he's faced a lot of support from the right, Christine Blasey Ford, many different angles of attack. We've been doing everything that we can to rebut some of those angles of attack. There's one in particular that I do want to focus on, though. This is something that I think has been implicit in a lot of the statements about men who are accused of sexual harassment and sexual assault, from including Donald Trump, by the way. But it is getting more explicit on Fox News and amongst its personalities recently. So we have an excerpt from Laura Ingraham talking about her concerns over this scandal. Let's listen.
This could happen to any of you. Let's focus on men for a moment. Any of your sons, any of your brothers, any of your uncles, and they can't do a darn thing about it. Because guess what? If you start attacking this woman's credibility, you're attacking the victim. 30 plus years later, if you start questioning her political motivations, you're attacking a victim. If you start criticizing the liberal group she's given to over the years, donated to, you're criticizing a victim. This is no win. Where do you go? That's why they released it at the last minute. It was not inadvertent. It was not. And apparently, this accuser was fine with leaving Brett Kavanaugh on the second highest court of the land.
So there's a couple of different things I want to break down there. One is that so she's sort of setting up, I guess, sort of quasi straw man's. Like, so she, what she wants to say is, if you question the credibility of the victim, you're attacking the victim. But she literally says, if you attack the credibility of the victim, you're attacking the victim. If you attack this about the, if you attack, she kept saying attack. Yes, that's attacking the alleged victim in this case. And then says, well, what are you going to do? You have nothing to do. Well, first of all, I mean, as general advice, I would tell people to not sexually assault people. That's one sort of preemptive defense. But he could bring on the witness that supposedly was there, Mark Judge. He's choosing not to do that. Why does that not bother Laura Ingraham? If there was another person in the room, she has no interest whatsoever in having him testify before the Senate. That seems weird. But of course, overall, the message there is, don't think for one second about whether Brett Kavanaugh actually raped this woman or attempted to rape this woman. Think only about how bad would it be if your son was accused, if your uncle was accused, if I can think of some other male relative of yours that could be accused. That's the only thing you should be worried about. It's all lies and you could be next, loyal Fox
viewer.
Yes,
it's the same tactic. I don't know how people keep buying it. And I've said this before, how the people who suck all this up keep buying it. So They're explicitly illustrating how stupid they think you are. They will separate logic from feelings, and then or actually separate logic and ask you to focus on the feelings alone. Let's not talk about Brett Kavanaugh, as you just pointed out. Let's not talk about Brett Kavanaugh. Your uncle, your father, your brother, your son, your nephew. It could be any of them. Mm-hmm. Wait, they're coming for you. Yeah. Like, that's all that's left. It's all that's left is fear and stoking how much they're worried about. Oh man, this could happen to my brother. That means it's happening to Brett Kavanaugh. Yeah. Where does that connection happen? So, you know, there's plenty of false allegations when it comes to assault, right? But it's not overwhelming, and it's definitely not the majority of the mm-hmm. time, right? I've said it before. I've known 5 women that have been assaulted, 2 actually fully raped, which is not like it's there's the hierarchy. It's all horrible. Mm-hmm. None of them told their stories. Mm-hmm. And I was asked to never tell anyone. Yeah. So that type of stuff, It's straight up and regular. So there's nothing they're gaining from keeping it to themselves. But as long as there's that fear that guy who they'd accuse it of is afraid of his brother or his father being the next, then that's what they're worried about. Because they're getting told the same thing, like, wait, if I say something, what are they going to say about me? Yeah. And then how much are they going to bash me over this actual accusation that really did happen?
Exactly. Like, okay, so if you were to take the sum total of all of the false allegations, we can actually know that number. I don't know for sure, but I'm going to guess that there are 50 times, 100 times as many rapes that go unreported, assaults that go unreported, instances of harassment that go unreported. And feel free to come up with examples of guys whose lives were ruined with no evidence whatsoever that they committed this attack. So they didn't actually commit the attack, and they're wallowing in jail. That's an amazing myth, I guess. I don't see the reality of it, though.
I'm sure there's some. I'm sure there's some that couldn't somehow disprove it. And then I can't give you the number, but I'm sure there's folks that have been falsely accused of stuff. It happens with damn near any crime.
Yeah.
There's a false accusation, and the person somehow couldn't get away to clear themselves.
Yeah.
But when there's actual things that you're trying to hide from the evidence behind it, those folks that got falsely accused didn't have anything to disprove it, and then we just assume their guilt. This is folks, we're looking for the answer, and you don't want it.
You don't want the answer, yeah. And by the way, if there are people who have these accusations against them, both in the modern era and maybe 75 years ago, I'm going to guess that they didn't look like Brett Kavanaugh, those who went down, who might have been executed as a result of this. They probably looked a little bit different. They probably weren't incredibly well-connected, powerful Republicans. Okay, now, with that said, I also want to talk about Donald Trump, because he was asked about this, and what he did, I think, was just play a recording of him talking about Rob Porter and his domestic abuse allegations, because it sounds exactly the same. He said, really, they're hurting somebody's life. I think it's a very unfair thing what's going on. He's not talking about her being forced to move or hire private security because of death threats. He's talking about Brett Kavanaugh. I really want to see her talking about the possible testimony. I really would want to see what she has to say. If she shows up and makes a credible showing, that'll be very interesting. And it's good that we have an open-minded president who will just actually listen to what she says and decide based on that without any considerations of politics. Of course, that's not going to happen. But yeah, so look, this is exactly how they defend. He's the true victim. It's always the abuser. It's always the accused that's a victim, this poor guy. Brett Kavanaugh is fine. There were reporters outside of his house over the past couple of days. His wife was apparently distributing Sprinkles cupcakes to the reporters. You know why? Because they live in a fabulous bubble where nobody's giving them death threats, even though he was accused of an actual crime. The victim, though, she has to move. Her, God knows what's going to happen with her kids in terms of school and everything. That's what you would expect if you're on the wrong side of an accusation against a powerful man.
Yeah, the president also, he mentioned Brett Kavanaugh's daughters. His daughters have to go through all this. It's just disgusting what they have to do. But he hasn't mentioned Ford's children, her teenage children, that she has to live separately from right now. Either.
Yeah. But, you know, like to the extent that we should have concern for the daughters, here's why I'm concerned for the daughters. I'm concerned for the daughters because they're growing up in a world where there's endless apologetics for men who commit sexual assault against exactly that sort of person. How about we create a world where that doesn't happen? Or where if it does happen and they are eventually girls like that have to accuse that man, they're believed for at least a split second before we go back to the normal political process. And I will advance one thing that I saw a tweet going around, thankfully, that was being spread quite a bit. All of these people who are saying this is just something that happened in high school, can you really judge a person based on that? Do they really know what's going on? Does that really say anything about who they are? That is a great message to send to 16 and 17-year-old boys who were desperately trying to bash into their brain this idea that consent matters and you should actually care about it. To hear all of the most influential and powerful people around the country saying, well, look, if you do something, it's really not that bad. We should probably forget about it in a few years anyway.
You're still young. You can get beyond it. Last thing about the kids. It's one of the reasons that I think they like to put their kids on display like this. Like you saw there also in the first day of the hearings when the protests were happening, they decided to go with and say, oh, you're scaring the kids, his kids, his kids, his kids. Get his kids the hell out of there. Why are they there? Your kids have nothing to do with this. And so then they can say later, hey, you know, he's got these two beautiful daughters. Don't say anything bad about him. In case he's ever done anything, you can't say it while his daughters are there. It's a wall. It's a shield against the guy and the scrutiny he's going to see. He's going to put his kids out there in front of him. How about you eliminate your kids from the spotlight if you don't want your kids to hear about your life? Mm-hmm. Just get them out of there then. What are they there for? They're there so we can't talk about you.
And what was the team there for? Oh, this guy knew that this was coming. The Republicans obviously knew because they had that letter. Okay, quick break. When we come back, maybe even a worse defense of accused rapists on the other side. Welcome back to the Damage Report. We've got some major damage to report, and that is what was caused by Hurricane Florence. Now, obviously, the single largest amount of damage that was done is the human toll. 38 people as of this point are reported dead. It's possible that and I know that this bothers Donald Trump, but it's possible that number could go up as investigations are done. Those numbers actually do change. But 38 people dying from a hurricane is not nothing. And look, we can say that the first responders and FEMA and the Coast Guard and all that did a great job, and perhaps they did, but 38 people still died. So we can also take a critical look at what's been done, what could be done in the future. One great area of that perhaps is taking the science behind climate change seriously and actually doing something about it rather than censoring climate science as some of these states have in terms of their policymaking. But outside of the human toll, there's also an area that Vice is reporting on that I haven't seen much discussion. And that is some of the other things that have been destroyed by this hurricane. So perhaps you didn't know, I didn't know, but North Carolina is home to the densest population of hogs in the country, with 2,100 hog farms producing an estimated 40 million gallons of hog poop a day. most of which ends up being stored in 3,000 lagoons, these pig poop lagoons. And I will just point out that expressing it as 40 million gallons of poop is somehow even worse than just the sheer reality of what they're talking about. So here's the problem with those lagoons. As of noon Tuesday, 4 hog lagoons in the hurricane area had been breached, 13 had overflowed, and 9 had been inundated from water. Another 55 were at or almost at capacity and in danger of overflowing. So these are not like, you might be picturing a basin or perhaps something big. These are massive lagoons of hog poop. And in advance of the hurricane, they had a plan to help lower the level of the poop in the lagoons by spraying it all over fields, which is its own problem, hypothetically. But they still had these overflows. And more are potentially coming because flooding is still expected in this area after the hurricane has already largely dissipated. And here is the problem with that. These hog lagoons have E. coli, Giardia, Salmonella, a number of other like diseases and toxins and stuff like that can, once it's overflown or been sprayed, can then be exposed to the air, people living in that area. And this is in addition to things like fungal mold and things like that that are common after hurricanes, after areas have been flooded. This is just another thing that the people returning to this area might have to deal with once they're able to attempt to resume their lives.
Again, this is something else that has to go with preparedness for this, right? So I didn't know that either, right? I didn't know that there was millions of gallons of lagoons of poop in North Carolina and that it's the world's number one spot for a hog.
They don't advertise it for the tourists, really.
And then, North Carolina.
By the way, these are all over the place in the Midwest as well. But yeah. North Carolina has a lot.
North Carolina, we've got the hogs, right? So it's one thing you have to prepare for, or at least in the meantime, if you know you're in an area that needs this type of stuff, you know every year there's hurricane season. Yes, every year a hurricane does not hit North Carolina. But in general, if you have if your business runs out of there, there has to be some kind of preparation for this. Mm-hmm. I mean, my first earthquake I experienced as a Californian when I was a freshman in college here, I was on like the 27th floor of a building. Guess what that building did? It swayed.
Yeah.
Because the people who built that building said, you know, I'm going to build a building in Southern California where earthquakes tend to happen more than other places in the country. Let's plan for that.
Yeah.
And if it didn't, maybe that building would have come down. Who knows? But when you have a company or you run a business in a place where stuff like this happens, you should prepare for it. And if you're part of an emergency response, government emergency response agency, you got to help figure out how to plan for that. That's why they ask questions like, hey, did you learn anything from last year, President Trump? So if I was the president and I didn't know anything about this hog thing and this stuff happened, like you're talking about, I'm going to go, man, we got to make sure we avoid that next year because this looks bad.
Well, and here's one way to avoid it. Saying that they should prepare is all well and good, but preparations are often costly and businesses don't want to spend money.
Yeah.
So one way you help them prepare is regulations. You know, Trump always talking about how many regulations he shredded. Every one of those regulations is put in place to protect you from some possible outcome. When you remove them, you make it more likely that those risks will actually come true, that bad things will happen. And so had they more closely regulated these lagoons, maybe we wouldn't have some of these problems. There's another area in a related way that we could hypothetically institute new regulations, but powerful interests don't want to because they don't want the money to be spent. So a coal ash landfill owned by Duke Energy near Wilmington collapsed twice already, once on Saturday, once on Monday, thanks to the hurricanes, spilling at least 2,000 cubic yards of coal ash, about enough to fill 150 dump trucks, and sending stormwater contaminated with that ash into a nearby lake. Coal ash is a toxic byproduct of burning coal for energy and contains high levels of both heavy metals and toxins like mercury and arsenic. And they just pile it up, usually in areas where poor people tend to live. And perhaps the wind sends it whipping all over the area, infecting people, causing respiratory illnesses and things like that. Or maybe you just leave it around until a hurricane comes, and then it gets leached off there by the water, goes into the ponds, lakes, and starts to distribute throughout the environment.
But, you know, once those toxins and stuff go into the ponds and lakes, doesn't it just kind of get diluted and washed away? That's how that works, right?
Probably. I mean, once it's there, there's so much water. What could it possibly do?
What can happen?
And so it's possible that in future years, people in that area will have a higher prevalence of certain types of illness. And maybe there'll be a documentary about it. We'll try to figure out how it happened. Maybe we're seeing how it happens right now in practice.
And this, again, is a company. You talk about the company that had the coal ash come up. They were convicted before. Duke Energy has been convicted before and actually admitted guilt to it and paid tens of millions of dollars for their part in not and not safely taking care of their waste. Mm-hmm. These are the regulations that people talk about every time when something goes, when you put someone in place, the EPA, and they just let people run roughshod over everything they're doing, and then folks are affected by it. Mm-hmm. But at this point, we can't talk about it anymore. When there's so many different ways that normalcy and how you regulate people and just don't let them do whatever they want affects everyone else's lives. Or is that too, I don't know, representative of you?
Yeah. Okay, look, there's one other area that I want to get into having to do with this hurricane. Donald Trump very impressed with himself in his performance during Hurricane Florence. And he especially wants you to understand how impressive it is considering how dangerous that hurricane was. And he had a very unique way of expressing that danger.
This is a tough hurricane. One of the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water. Rarely have we had an experience like it, and it certainly is not good. There's been a loss of life, and may God be with them and their families. That's a tough one.
Look, you might see that and you might laugh and say that is a pathetic performance from the President of the United States, but I think that was actually impressive when you realize that he had just been walking through that field and a reporter yelled out, "Hey, what's going on?" And he had to give a book report with very little notice.
This was planned. This wasn't off the cuff.
He recorded that and released it.
No, so the plan was to say in the standpoint of water, this is the worst we've seen. Well, to be fair to him,
how bad is the wind from the standpoint of air?
I guess, to be fair.
This land, quite solid from the standpoint of Earth. No, Captain Planet's not going to hang out with you. It doesn't matter how many appeals you make to him based on various elements.
Well, those past hurricanes, okay, from the standpoint of soda, were really bad.
We have to go. But just one other thing. I saw Kyle Griffin when he was tweeting this out. There was another thing. I hadn't seen this. During Trump's visit to the CIA after his inauguration, he suggested to agency officials that bombs should be made silent, saying, "Can they hear the bombs coming? We should make the bombs silent so they can't get away." No, yeah, I think it's always been ridiculous that we attach those little like swizzle swirler things that scream. You know, they put those on cars as they're rolling around your neighborhood. Why do they put them on the bombs? The terrorists are getting away.
We can make a Prius silent, but we can't make a bomb silent. By the way, and also, man, these guys must be fast. The next guy who runs away from a bomb mm-hmm. and escapes because of his sheer speed, I'd sign that guy up for the next Olympics.
Yeah. They hear that distinctive wubba 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 dropping, and then they run. What an idiot. Okay, no, we're stuck with him. Sorry, we've got him for at least a couple more years, possibly six. Okay, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're joined by cognitive neuroscientist Bobby Azarian, who's an expert on narcissistic personality disorder. I've got a couple of questions for him. As we showed you with the from the perspective of water video before the break, Donald Trump's got some issues in terms of intelligence. But it's possible that his personality flaws go a little bit deeper and could impact how he acts as president. To help talk about that and more, we're now joined by neuroscientist Bobby Azarian. Bobby, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, John? Thanks for having me on.
We're very glad to have you here. So there's so many things I want to talk to you about, but you recently had an article that I read on Alternet talking about various aspects of how Donald Trump's personality intersect with the ways that he interprets the news, responds to developments in the Mueller investigation. And we have certainly noticed that when bad news breaks, when there are leaks, he doesn't respond well. Why do you think that is, personality-wise?
So first I want to say I'm not an expert in narcissistic personality disorder, but I do try to look at what's going on in the world of politics and try to analyze that from a psychology perspective. And, you know, when I'm watching what's going on with Donald Trump, one of the first things that comes to mind is his narcissistic personality. So when we're going to talk about this, I think it's important to establish that he is, in fact, a narcissist. Usually when you want to give someone a clinical diagnosis, you want to give them a full mental examination. But with Donald Trump, it's kind of a rare case because we have these mountains and mountains of behavioral evidence. We have videos, tapes, and we see him on TV every day making these extravagant claims, bragging, saying, "I'm the greatest president. I'm the smartest. My crowd sizes are the biggest." He's compared his book to the Bible in a room full of conservatives, which, you know, takes a special kind of narcissist to do that. This has caused dozens of respected psychologists to go on the record saying that Donald Trump is, in fact, a narcissist. So once we establish that, we can use that to kind of think about why he behaves in the way he does. And, you know, it's a great question. Why is he reacting the way he does to these leaks and close allies turning on him? And when you have a situation like that where someone is being disgraced or humiliated, or they've, you know, they're under the threat of potentially losing power, that's called narcissistic injury. Okay. And when you have a narcissist experiencing narcissistic injury, they tend to behave in certain ways. So their behavior becomes a lot more erratic. They lash out at people. They start to bully people and act aggressive. And they try to place the blame elsewhere. And that really lines up with what we've seen. So, and what we've heard from books like Bob Woodward's Fear and the anonymous New York Times article from someone on Trump's team. We heard about the internal chaos in the White House. We also see, you know, in the past few weeks, the Twitter rants becoming increasingly crazy. And we've seen him go after Jeff Sessions and try to place the blame on him for everything that's going on, rather than taking personal responsibility. And so it really lines up quite nicely, his behavior, with the fact that he has a narcissistic personality.
You know, I'm really curious how he reacts, what he says, what he does. Certainly, that's the important part substantively. But when you have a personality like this, does he on any level underneath that understand or accept his weaknesses, his limitations, his failures? Like, he's lashing out, trying to, in my view, cover for this. Is that the case, or is he actually blind to all of these worst impulses of his?
I mean, I think narcissists generally think that they're infallible, and whenever something goes wrong, it's someone else's fault. So I think a lot of times it doesn't even come to his mind like, oh, I'm responsible for this. I was on camera campaigning and told Russia to find the Clinton emails, or I let these meetings go on that I knew about. I think he immediately goes to, oh, it's Jeff Sessions' fault because he recused himself. And now he can't fire Mueller. Yeah. And that was the reason that I chose him, for his loyalty. So, yeah, I think that narcissists have this sort of blind spot where they don't see reality as it is. And they're always trying to place the blame elsewhere.
So you sort of alluded to these possibilities, but he's been facing increased levels of pressure due to people flipping, the people that he considers loyal allies previously. If the investigation moves into a new phase, if Donald Trump Jr. is charged, if he's potentially dragged away to prison, if there's a clear threat to the continuation of his presidency, how can we expect that he'll respond? Not just in terms of how he'll act, but what he might do.
Yeah, so I think when a narcissist is experiencing a narcissistic injury to an extreme degree, that causes narcissistic rage. And narcissistic rage really entails a lot of the things that I just said, the blaming others, the lashing out, the bullying, the threats. But that all just gets bumped up a notch. So I think if we see, you know, someone in his family charged, I think we can expect that Twitter rants to become increasingly crazy. I think he's going to blame the media, blame Democrats. And I think, you know, if it gets to that point, we might actually see him fire Jeff Sessions and try to replace him with someone who could actually shut down the Mueller probe. And that would be terrible, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities.
Interesting. Okay, I want to project ahead a year maybe into the future. We watched him campaign. We understand that, you know, he portrayed everything in the country as absolutely damaged and broken. He's the only person that can fix it. He can bring it back to greatness. He's going to be running for re-election, assuming he's still in office. And now the country is his. He's had it for some time. They have power in all these different areas. A narcissist, how do they run for re-election in that situation?
Donald Trump's favorite political tactic is fear-mongering. And he also likes making people very angry. And these emotions do a number of things. When people are fearful, they are pushed to the ideological extreme. So people who might be moderate conservatives, if you tell them, you know, there's immediate dangers you have to worry about, immigrants and Muslims, they hate America, and you're saying all this stuff, you're basically, you know, polarizing people and pushing, you know, the people on your side further to the right. So yeah, that's a tactic that he's always used. And I think, you know, if he's running again, it's basically just going to be more of the same, but, you know, the intensity pushed up. And I think he's going to say things like, you know, if he's not reelected, America's going to fall apart. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that he already kind of started going down that path a few weeks ago. It was the day that Michael Cohen accepted the plea deal and Manafort was found guilty on 8 charges. And, you know, the concept of impeachment was starting to become more of a reality. Trump did an interview with Fox News the next day, and he said that if he's impeached, he thinks the economy would crash.
That's true.
Everyone would be poor, you know. And, you know, any kind of uncertainty is going to affect the economy. But to say everybody's overnight is going to become poor, it's just, you know, this fear-mongering that we see.
Yeah.
And, so I think, you know, that's what he's going to resort to, and that's what he does best.
Okay, well, buckle up, America. Okay, Bobby Azarian, cognitive neuroscientist at George Mason University, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been attacked from a pretty bizarre angle. Welcome back to The Damage Report. Almost no time left. So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez recently did an interview with the aptly titled Interview Magazine. And so, JR, you see this title, A No-Nonsense Conversation, and you see the picture. What's your first reaction?
Those bricks are very worn and torn, what she's sitting on. She's in a nice outfit, but it's like a rugged surroundings. It's a nice contrast.
It is nice contrast, yes. That's not, though, how everyone responded to that. So we're going to choose one representative example of many people on the right who were infuriated by this article because they're diligent readers of Interview Magazine and they don't like to see someone like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on it. So Charlie Kirk, I don't want to read his tweet, but he said, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who pretends to be a champion of the people and believes the unemployment went down because we're taking 2 jobs, just posed in a photo shoot with a $3,500 outfit, $625 shoes, all while saying the rich have too much power and that socialism hasn't been tried. So he doesn't like that she is trying to look out for people who don't have money. And in that photo, she's wearing an outfit that's expensive. Now, this fits into a long line of tweets from Charlie Kirk, where he has criticized Melania's outfits and Donald Trump sitting on a golden toilet and all of that. He doesn't like that sort of ostentatious behavior. I'm kidding. Of course, he's never said that. And by the way, I'm sure he was also frustrated when Trump, who's touring areas damaged by Hurricane Florence right now, asked about whether his golf course had been hit. Now, there's a champion of the people for you who's worried about the green on the seventh, I guess. But no, he didn't talk about any of that, just Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who responded saying, the alt-right doesn't seem to understand the concept of magazine shoots. You don't get to keep the clothes. I don't pretend to fight for a living wage and Medicare for all. I do it. And then finishes up saying, get used to me slaying looks because I'm an excellent thrift shopper. And that just kills me. So that's not her outfit. It's not like she has a wardrobe full of fancy attire. They clothe her for the shoot.
They know this. They know this. That's why it's disingenuous in the first place. There's photo shoots for anybody who's any kind of high-level candidate. Mm-hmm. And especially there's a story about them. There's a story about who she is. And so, and also, yeah, in response to some of this, I think at one point someone was saying, oh, well, why don't you wear your own clothes to the photo shoot? Because that's what happens at photo shoots. You walk up to a magazine and you go, you know what? I got my jeans and my t-shirt that I like to wear. Let's wear that. Mm-hmm. So then the magazine's going to go, yeah, let's do that. Yeah, come on. No, people have a job to make sure this shoot looks a certain way. The magazine is trying to have their take. And then the person who's being interviewed or in the magazine is getting exposure. Yeah. That's all this is. This is an exchange. The magazine doesn't want to sell magazines by saying, hey, you see Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's old jeans?
Mm-hmm.
No, they're looking to show the outfit off too.
Yes. Exactly. Now, most of those on the right actually understand that. They just want to attack her regardless. Charlie Kirk is actually too stupid to know that. I'm surprised to this day that he can operate the keyboard necessary to tweet in the first place. But thank you to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for responding to that. I would go one additional step farther and say that no one in the history of socialism, democratic socialism, the DSA, or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's campaign has ever claimed that fighting for a living wage or any of this includes a vow of poverty. So even if she had that outfit, she can wear it. She wants everyone to be able to afford $600 shoes. We're not there yet. We don't even have a living wage or a $15 minimum wage, but we're hoping to get there. And if we get there, it's going to be through the work of people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, not vultures like Charlie Kirk. That said, thank you for watching, JR. Thank you, as always, for joining us on Wednesday. We will see you tomorrow morning with more. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.